From KQED Public Radio, this is Capital Notes, our weekly look at California politics.
Okay. And the budget, that's
basically
what you said.
I guess this week we'll try to talk about something other than the budget quickly. But yeah, it's still the budget. This is for the week ending, the 26th? Friday,
yes.
The 26th? Though we're taping it on Thursday, so the legislature will be in session on Friday. If something exciting happens, don't get frustrated that we didn't talk about it on the podcast, because it's Thursday afternoon, and we had to do something.
Yes.
So, is that a good way of explaining it?
No.
All right, let's just keep going. Let's move on. Anthony York is the editor of Capital Weekly, the person who was telling me to move on. I'm John Myers from KQED, and...
You're moving on.
So, we have, this is one of those stories where it feels like lots of things happened.
And
at the end of the, as Friday comes, as the sun comes up on Friday probably, it'll be exactly where it was when we started the week.
Yes.
With the exception of all the Hollywood celebrities who died this week.
Right.
But that's another story.
In the real world... Nothing happened.
Yeah.
In our little world, we've all been running around like chickens with our heads cut off.
Yeah, well, because a lot back and forth happened, but it all just kind of settled back out at zero or whatever. Well, let's see. I don't know where we should jump in. Maybe probably we could jump in with what happened last. Or no, what do you think?
I think we go back and tell the whole story of the week.
Chronological. Go for it.
Well, what happened first? What happened first? Democrats put up votes for some... cut bills, right, that were part of a package that they said was a comprehensive package to address a $19 to $21 billion deficit.
It's a 20-bill package, 20, 21 bills, but the only one that went up for a vote at the beginning of the week was the one that would cut about $11, $12 billion in state spending.
Right. Cut, defer payments, whatever
yeah.
you want.
However you want it. Yeah, however
cuts,
you want it.
Cuts in Sacramento.
How about
quotes.
This? Reduction in spending.
Yes, by $10 or $11 billion.
11 or 12? Yeah, go
10,
ahead.
10 to 12.
Please.
Okay.
Details.
And again, it doesn't matter because those bills were defeated. And Republicans voted against those cut bills because they wanted a comprehensive budget solution. That was, Tuesday? I'm losing track here. That was Tuesday.
Yeah.
Wednesday was there.
Wednesday, let's see. Let's play it out this way. That was all. Well, we actually didn't get the debate and the vote until Wednesday.
That was Wednesday. Yeah. It's all blurring together.
Let's just put it this way. We got the vote, and as the debate was going on, the controller, John Chung, steals the show and issues a press release that says he will begin issuing IOUs for about $3.6 billion worth of invoices that the state has to pay in July. Mm-hmm. He'll begin issuing IOUs on July 2nd if there's no deal. So ratchets up the pressure. And so then we get to Thursday. That's today, the day we're taping this. You'll be hearing it on Friday. And so we get in the morning what seemed like to be a nice little story where Democrats and the Republicans in the Assembly, had agreed to approve three of the deficit bills that the conference committee reported out that would effectively save the state cash in July, thus avoiding the IOUs. About $5 billion in cash, basically deferrals of payments to education and a few other things.
Right. Which will probably be part of a final budget package eventually.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, they very likely are going to have to be done anyway. So pass through with zero no votes in the Assembly.
Right.
Where before the Assembly finished, the governor released a statement saying he'd veto them, which then the Senate Republicans joined with the governor in opposing them. And so the package of bills died in the Senate. And that's what we get on Friday, right back where we started the week.
Right. So, like you said, zero-sum game, although procedurally and politically, some points of note for budget watchers. Number one is that the governor and Senate Republicans are on the same page. The governor met with the Senate Republican caucus on Thursday afternoon after the bills had gotten out of the Assembly, or while they were moving out of the Assembly, and urged Republicans to hold the line because these bills need two-thirds majority to pass out.
Or to take effect immediately.
Right. And they urged Republicans, or the governor urged Senate Republicans to hold the line, withhold their votes, and send the bills down to defeat. And lo and behold, the governor, who historically has not had the best relationship with the Senate Republican caucus.
I'm going to go out on a limb, and I'm going to say it's probably the most consistently bad relationship the governor's had in the building in recent times. He's even done better with Democrats than he's done with Republicans in the Senate.
Clearly. And you can argue even done better with Assembly Republicans, right? As you, and But for today, at least, for the moment, the governor and the Senate Republicans seem to be marching to the same drum, and that is a comprehensive $24 billion budget solution, all or nothing.
It was interesting, too, because, and let's talk about this last part, this whole thing about the dynamics of who was on what side at the end here. You had basically had everybody else aligned on the other side. Assembly Democrats, Senate Democrats, Assembly Republicans, the state controller, John Chung, the state treasurer, Bill Lockyer, all said, this is not, you know, we got to keep working on the whole thing, but let's pass these three. Let's avoid the IOUs next week. And Senate Republicans and the governor both said no. It was interesting talking to Sam Blakesley, the leader of the Republicans in the Assembly, who was talking to reporters after the vote. And, you know, was very careful with his words, very measured in the way he talked about his difference with the governor, said that they simply had a difference on tactics,
right,
of how to get the budget solution in place. It wasn't that they disagree on what the solution for the state needs to be, just a tactical, I think he was kind of trying to downplay the difference, a tactical difference on how you get there, and really thought that the chance to save the money should happen now.
And I think from the governor's perspective, it's the urgency that July 2nd deadline now holds. I think the governor's hope is that it will accelerate the conversation and lead to a larger solution in a shorter time frame. I think the concern from the governor's office is that if the state essentially gets a stay, you know, for the month of July or whatever it is, July and August, that we're looking at a budget standoff that's going to drag on throughout the summer. I mean, if there's no urgency, this is the legislature as a body tends to only react to deadline pressures. And if you alleviate some of those pressures, this is my read on and from talking to the governor's office today, the sense is that if you take that pressure away, that you're not going to get a budget solution in the macro sense, the kind that the governor's looking for.
What seems to be problematic at this point is getting that solution in the short amount of time, because, again, I go back to some of the statements over the last from Wednesday to Thursday in Republicans and talking to reporters. Let me go back to Sam Blakesley, the leader of the Republicans in the Assembly, who said he agrees with the framework that the governor's put forward for a budget solution.
Right.
So theoretically there, he doesn't have as many differences. Maybe Republicans in the Assembly can find, you know, can kind of find some common ground there, at least with the governor, and then try to figure out where they are with the Democrats, which is no easy task. But let's say that's easier as from what I'm about to say. Dennis Hollingsworth, the leader of the Republicans in the Senate, told reporters on Wednesday after the vote that what was acceptable to him was somewhere on the order of $18 or $19 billion in spending reductions, whereas the governor has about 14
to 15-ish.
Yeah, and I'm going to call the Democratic package about 12.
Just right.
You know, the point
that's
being
apples to apples.
Yeah, the point being somewhere on the magnitude of $5 to $7 billion more in spending reductions than anyone has put on the table. Now, he says that those are all basically things that have been talked about. He didn't really get a very firm list from him at the time. He said that there were suggestions the ledge analyst had put out. There were suggestions that the conference committee had rejected, et cetera, et cetera. But I guess my point here is, if you've got one caucus, and let's assume the 15 members of the Senate Republican caucus are all speaking with one voice, which isn't necessarily so in the Capitol.
We'll get to that.
We'll get to that in a second. But assuming just for a moment if they were, you've got to solve another $5 to $7 billion in about 5 days. That seems like a very tough task.
But I think the hypothetical is really the key there, and I think
hypothetical basically just doesn't hold water.
Well, no. I mean, it's the fact that Senate Republicans are not as united as Mr. Hollingsworth would like them to be, I think. And also the different dynamics in all four of the caucuses. I think in the Assembly Democratic Caucus, you have members who are not going to vote for cuts. Remember, the cut bills need a two-thirds majority to pass out. And whatever revenue accelerator, other pieces, $6 to $8 billion worth of budget magic that the governor and the Democrats have both proposed on different levels, that stuff's going to pass out with 41 votes. But on the Assembly side, you have some Democrats, Sondre Swanson, who said he won't vote for more cuts.
Democrat from Oakland.
You know, and you've got, I think, a couple other members. You know, we saw today, he said Assemblyman Tom Torlakson, who's running for superintendent of public instruction.
Democrat of Antioch.
And also a candidate for SPI, as I just said. who is probably not going to vote for education cuts, as we saw today. And so the dynamics, and although Senator Gloria Romero is also a Democrat from Los Angeles, is also running for that post. But there are some dynamics in the assembly where they're going to need some more Republican votes. And I think that it'll be easier to get those votes, even though I think it'll be easier to get more votes in the assembly. On the Senate side, you've got now 25 Democrats. Remember when we went through this before, there was a Democratic vacancy. There were only 24 Democrats and you needed 3 votes. Now you only need 2. Sure. And so you've got 3 Republicans who have already voted for a budget. You've got Abel Maldonado, a moderate Republican from the Central Coast. You've got Dave Cogdill, the ousted Republican leader from Fresno.
Modesto.
Anyway, okay.
He's not believing me on that one. And the final one, Roy Ashburn. Go ahead.
And Roy Ashburn from Bakersfield. And I think the dynamics, are already in place here. You know, we saw Maldonado, as you tweeted earlier this week, Maldonado was saying that that he might step out on his own and introduce a plan, and that he wasn't going to let this drag on for months and months and weeks and weeks. And I think, you know, my sense from Senator Cogdill is that he's just waiting. He's waiting to blow a hole in Dennis Hollingsworth's leadership. I mean, I just don't get the sense that there's any love lost between Senator Cogdill and Senator Hollingsworth.
Wikipedia says Dave Cogdill has been a resident of Modesto for 28 years.
Okay, then.
I Googled it in the BlackBerry while you were talking.
That you get cell reception in the studio
is
amazing.
It's pretty good. It's the powerful BlackBerry.
Okay, Modesto.
Well, those dynamics are fascinating. You
Clovis? Can we settle on Clovis?
Okay.
No, that's
Mike Vallines.
Yeah.
Boy, we've got way too many people in the mix here. The dynamic you talked about that I find is fascinating is the whole people running for another office at some point and worrying about how these votes could be portrayed in those campaigns for another office. It also happened in the Senate,
right,
when Marc Desaulniers, state senator from the East Bay Area, laid off at 1.2 on votes, you know, and some people thinking that could impact him if he had voted for the cuts in his race for Congress, et cetera, et cetera.
Right.
So everybody's got something different they're bringing to the table. You know, again, the governor's office, as you know and I know, and talking to people down there, they feel that, you know, that consistency is important, that their message is consistent. We need a $24 billion fix. We need a $24 billion fix, et cetera, et cetera. I think the question becomes, you know, today, I would say on Thursday, I would quite frankly think they dodged a bullet, you know, by getting the Senate Republicans to stay with them on that message. Because if that bill had landed in the set of bills had landed in the governor's lap, I think that the public perception could have spun on the governor that here was a way to avoid the state going down the hole next week and the governor wouldn't take it.
Yeah, and that's why the governor met quickly with Senate Republicans this afternoon before the Senate vote and urged them to hold the line.
Yeah.
I mean, the governor did not want this in his lap, and I think the Senate Republicans did the governor, uncharacteristically, did the governor a favor. Now, whether this is a temporary political marriage of convenience or the sign of a beautiful friendship, as the line from Casablanca goes, remains to be seen. I tend to think it's probably the former, being the cynical reporter that I am, and seeing the dynamics. I mean, this is something that allows Hollingsworth to hold the line. And I think that Republicans are going to be asking for a lot of the same concessions that they've been asking for months. I mean, not only do they want deeper cuts, but, you know, I mean, Assemblyman Roger Nilo, I talked to him last week. He said they still want labor reforms. They want a lot of the structural reforms that don't directly have anything to do with the budget, but that as long as there's a budget negotiation going on, it's the only point in the cycle when Republicans have leverage.
And yet his leader, Sam Blakesley, said today he hasn't had any conversations with the governor or anyone about those, like, meal break, rest
right.
breaks and meals and things like that for employers. But, I mean, even so, I mean, if they want these other things on there and then but say they're not voting for this package because what's in the package, you know, they're just – I guess we say this every summer about budget negotiations, but I don't see where you go. I don't see, you know, who's the one who gives, who, what side gives, what issue gives. You know, I don't see any way the Democrats are going to do some of the cuts the Republicans want to do. I just don't see how you get it.
I could see them getting close to the governor's number. I can't see them getting to a $17 billion number. I mean, I don't see that.
Right. Because, I mean, because then you start going into the governor's most radical proposals.
Right.
And the elimination of social service programs that the Democrats aren't going to do.
I do think that there is something coming that, you know, Republicans are going to have to make a decision on, and that's going to be the issue of borrowing from local governments. I think that you know, Democrats are getting ready to put Republicans in the spot where you're deciding between something, whether it's new revenues or, you know, it looks like they've abandoned this idea, at least for now, about increasing taxes on alcohol or on tobacco and
oil.
Help me out here.
Oil extraction, oil production in the state of California. It's been a long day for you.
Yeah, it's been a long week. Between choosing between those tax increases and perhaps borrowing from local government, which translates in the real world to cuts to police and fire. I mean, that's what cities do, and that's, I think, where the bulk of the cuts would come. I think Democrats are going to try to do what they can to shape this debate and frame it. I think the governor has outflanked them, frankly, since May 20th. The governor has been more successful at framing the debate, interpreting the message of the voters from May 19th, and setting the parameters of the budget debate. And Democrats have sort of struggled since then to find their footing. There have been efforts by the Service Employees Union and others to try to change that debate. And I think you saw the Assembly Democrats, you know, balk a little bit at the governor. But I think by and large, the governor has been more successful than Democrats at framing the budget debate.
That was my cell phone. Sorry.
Which
was my wife.
She'll
have to wait. Okay, but here's one of the discussion topics that I have heard in the hallways of the Capitol. That's also known as, I heard it in so many different places while we're waiting for something. I can't attribute to anyone. I'm not making it up. Sorry.
Sure, you're not.
No, but I think this is an analysis point that we could talk about for a moment. On the subject of the governor maybe outflanking in political strategy the Democrats or being able to get the upper hand since May 19th, you wonder what would happen, and maybe I saw this written on something online. You wonder what would happen if the governor's package of cuts was put up for a vote. You know, if Democrats would put Republicans on the spot about voting for the elimination of CalWORKs, for the elimination of Healthy Families, especially when you look at how many counties that are represented by Republicans use those services more even than a lot of Democratic-leaning counties.
Right.
But, you know, so the question becomes, why wouldn't the Democrats have ever put up, you know, the governor's plan for a vote in some way to put the Republicans in that particular place?
Even on corrections. I mean, you heard Senator Hollingsworth say he has different ideas about how to trim money from the corrections budget because he doesn't want to see prisoners released early, which is part of the governor's plan. Well, it's because the Democrats don't want to run drills, John. They don't want to run budget drills.
Yeah, you know, and I appreciate that. And
there's a little sarcasm. I was
But I was going to say, I mean, you know, the whole notion of drills. I mean, I want to, at the risk of getting on a soapbox for a moment. We have all kind of in the press. I think we've all kind of jumped into this. We have accepted that premise from people inside the Capitol a lot, that everything is a drill. When in reality, I think sometimes the public needs to see the legislature acting, even if they fail to act.
Right.
This whole notion that they go and negotiate behind closed doors or that they sit for a couple of days and think, I actually think makes the public think they're not doing work. So, you know, it may be a drill because they think they know what the outcome is going to be. But if people have strong beliefs and they get up and they say them, even if you fail to reach consensus, I don't see how that's a negative to the process.
No, but it's a political action. It's nothing else. If nothing else, it's a statement by Democrats about where they stand on particular issues. They would rather raise taxes on oil companies and on tobacco products than cut certain social services. I mean, that's a real statement of where Democrats are and what they believe in, that they're willing to go so far at this point. I mean, it's political. It's not policy, because from a policy perspective, everybody knows going in that this is not going to pass. You know, whether that makes it a quote unquote drill or whether there is some public value in it, you know, you can argue that one. I mean, I tend to agree with you. I think it is, you know, it is more than just a doing it for its own sake and trying to make other people look bad. I mean, I think there is more than that there. And I think part of it was a reaction to the fact that they did get outflanked by the governor, that the governor has been clear and successful at articulating what he thinks should happen. And Democrats took a while to find their footing. And the vote we saw early in the week was was a sort of a rebuttal to that.
So is there any benefit, just to wrap up the budget talk for a moment, is there any benefit to the Democrats putting up their entire package? Because, you know, they only put one bill up, the spending reductions bill. And then, of course, actually on Thursday, they put this deferral of cash package of bills up.
Right, which actually passed the Assembly.
It actually passed the Assembly. I mean, is there any downside to them putting up all 20 to get everybody on the record? Or again, or is that just stupid at this point because you know what the outcome is going to be, in which case... Then
I mean,
what?
If you lose the $11 billion, $12 billion linchpin of a $20 billion proposal, I mean, you can make the case that there's no reason to do it. Politically, there's no reason to put members up on the record to vote for tax increases, especially if they're not going to go anywhere. And so, again, that's why I say, I mean, people use the word drill. I think it's probably more accurate and more fair to say it has more to do with politics than it does with policy in a lot of ways.
Yeah. Well, clearly we're going to have to keep watching the budget stuff. I think we're going to be here this weekend. They all say they're planning at this
speak
point.
Speak for yourself.
Well,
man.
Sorry. Well, I'm going to be here some. You're not going to be here at all.
I'm going out of town, man. They don't pay me enough.
You got the beauty of working on a weekly newspaper.
I've got
the
beauty of an internet connection wherever I am.
That's true.
Well, I'll retweet all the stuff that you post.
You don't have to record audio like us radio people do.
No.
Anyway. So
wait. Then what am I doing now?
You're helping me out. So we're gonna be on this one for a while. You know, obviously, if we have some kind of breakthrough, you and I can come back and we can talk all about it, and you know, as we get up to July 4th. So let's end with just total step out of the budget politics and the other political story. Probably the other big political story of the week. Is that fair to say in California politics?
I think so.
Antonio Villaraigosa, the mayor of Los Angeles, announced on CNN's Situation Room with Wolf Blitzer.
Dun dun dun.
Yeah. I probably shouldn't say anything else. Villaraigosa announced on CNN he is not running for governor next year. He has officially withdrawn himself from the race for the Democratic nomination.
See, if you had one of those like AM DJ sound effect boards
we could do something fun.
Yeah, but public radio.
You've had a little too much a morning wacky radio show in your head.
Apparently.
So Villaraigosa backing out, leaving Newsom and Brown, Gavin Newsom, the mayor of San Francisco, Jerry Brown, the attorney general, as a likely two-man race, though there is a lot of speculation about is it really a two-man race or does this open it up for someone else to come in to be the alternative of this power struggle between Newsom and Brown?
Loretta Sanchez, you feeling it?
Jack O'Connell.
What we need, another white dude to break up the monotony.
You weren't chuckling about Jack himself.
No.
He's an honorable man.
No. I, in fact, Tim Hurt from the Ventura County Star
wrote a good piece about that.
Yeah,
yes.
and mentioned O'Connell. And O'Connell has backers, certainly in the education community. Reed Hastings, CEO of Netflix, and others associated with EdVoice, which ironically is where Steve Poizner, the Republican candidate for governor and current insurance commissioner, comes from. O'Connell has a lot of support in that community. O'Connell's going to have the same problem that a lot of other contenders are going to have, and that's going to be raising money.
But let's just back out. Okay, yeah, let's just back out and talk about the possibility of somebody else getting in. So money is the big obstacle. What about attention? I mean, the Newsom-Brown race sucks a lot of oxygen out of the contest,
right,
doesn't it?
Right, and look at the void. I mean, I think that one of the reasons in addition to his station as mayor of Los Angeles and a former speaker of the assembly, one of the reasons that Villaraigosa was such a strong, viable candidate is his geographic base. He's from Los Angeles and his ethnic background. He's Latino. And so that's why, you know, when you say does Villaraigosa stepping aside open the door for Jack O'Connell, I mean, I think it's perhaps more likely that it opens the door for someone like a Loretta Sanchez, who's from Southern California, who can appeal to Latino voters. Mm. Not that that would be an appeal to women. I mean, you know, get a woman in the race. If we're assuming that Feinstein is going to hem and haw for a while and end up again demurring, but I mean, I think that there is an opportunity for another politician who can raise some money, who has something of a profile. I don't know that Loretta Sanchez has the statewide profile But she would be a serious candidate, and it's something that she's talked about before. I'm not saying that it has to be Brown and Newsom, but it would have to be someone of stature and of means and a proven fundraiser to be able to compete at this point.
And in some ways, it really wasn't surprising that he made it official, because for weeks people have speculated he wasn't going to run. There were all the telltale signs.
Yep.
He hadn't raised a lot of money. He had accepted an honorary post with the U.S. Conference of Mayors that would lead him to be in charge of that national organization in a couple of years. He has his own problems with the city budget in Los Angeles. He had another whole dust up about his personal life and people asking questions about that. And, you know, so there were all these telltale signs. No one, you know, most people who watched this weren't really surprised. And yet I do find it interesting. As soon as he made it official, the buzz began about now what, now what, now what.
Well, and there's a lot of debate, conventional wisdom wise, whether this helps Newsom or Brown. I mean, you can make an argument both ways. This helps Newsom because you get the young challenger who's not Jerry Brown out of the race. And now Newsom has a clean shot at Brown, at least for now. Or you make the other case that, hey, Newsom does not have a base in Los Angeles, that as long as Villaraigosa was there siphoning off votes, that he took more away from Brown than he did from Newsom. You know, we'll see. I mean, I'm sure they'll be polling out there soon. You know, I mean, it's a long, long way to go. But for now, it's primarily a two-person race.
And you still have to wonder, why would they want the job?
It's all going to be fixed by then, man.
It's all going to be done. Come on. All going to be resolved.
Yeah.
You're optimistic.
Yeah, China's going to buy us. We'll be fine.
You heard it here first. In case it happens, you read it in the newspaper tomorrow. Okay, well, we'll keep watching the budget. And obviously, if there's more to talk about that, you know.
Wait, if China buys us, do we lose Twitter access?
If I lost Twitter access, what would I do?
I don't know.
Okay. You and me both. I think we're the only two Twittering reporters left.
Yes.
No, there are a few others.
The governor. The governor's
just, a, yeah, we just seem to be the most hooked to it.
Yes.
Yeah, anyway.
And them to us, right?
And them to, yeah, very barely so. All right, for Anthony York from Capital Weekly, I'm John Myers from KQED. We'll see you next time.